listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. This show is all about bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the way we engage with politics and what that means for 21st century democracy. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, PhD student and political communication researcher at the University of Copenhagen. Thanks for tuning in. And if you want to keep up to date with all the latest episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast or like us on Facebook. You can find our page by typing Social Media and Politics Podcast in the search box. Now, I just couldn't resist doing our first episode on Snapchat. It's my absolute favorite social medium. Snapchat is a multimedia messaging platform where users can take pictures or short videos called snaps, decorate them with various features like text or emojis, and then send them out to other users in their network. Once open and viewed, snaps are deleted and can't be viewed again. And that would have saved Inspector Gadget quite a lot of hassle.
This message will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
One exception to a snap's ephemerality is if it's posted to what's called a story. A Snapchat story is like a chronological bulletin of a user's snaps that are archived for 24 hours. Snapchat's concept is simple and sweet. So sweet that the company is currently valued at $20 billion U.S. dollars. Now, if you don't know what Snapchat is, you either A, live under a rock, or B, you're over 35. That's because 83% of Snapchat's users are under 35, with most being in the 18 to 24-year-old age range and going down into the tweens. With over 150 million daily active users, Snapchat has surpassed Twitter in popularity, and it only seems to keep going up. So if you want to reach out to young voters, Snapchat may be your best bet. And that's exactly what politicians, parties, and state institutions are doing all across the globe. Joining me today in just a moment will be Karolina Wozniak, social media coordinator for the European Parliament, to give us a firsthand glimpse into how and why the EP is using Snapchat to communicate with young Europeans. Now, the European Parliament is the EU's democratic organ. That is, its primary purpose is to represent the voice of European citizens in EU law and decision-making. Having launched its Snapchat account in May 2015, the EP is a relatively early adopter of Snapchat as far as institutions go. And it makes sense. Roughly one-third of Snapchat users are European, with Ireland, Belgium, and Sweden by far the most active Snapchatters. If you want to follow the EP's Snapchat account, and I recommend you do, go ahead and add them. Their account name is Europarl, E-U-R-O-P-A-R-L. And to tell us more about the European Parliament Snapchat account is the EP's social media coordinator, Karolina Wozniak, joining us from Brussels via Skype. Karolina, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Hey, thanks for talking about us on your first episode. That's quite exciting for us.
You got it. So let me ask you first off, what was the Parliament's motivation in deciding to open up a Snapchat account?
So we want to reach all people in Europe. This is our big goal, which is very difficult to achieve. And we want to reach young Europeans as well. We managed to reach older groups on Facebook or on Twitter, but we are lagging behind with the younger Europeans. So the aim of our Snapchat account is to connect directly with them.
And I've been following your account since the very first day. But to our listeners who might not be so familiar with how you guys are Snapchatting, what is it that you're actually posting about?
So most of the stories are about the Parliament, its work, what is happening inside, what the members are talking about, voting, a bit of behind the scenes. You might have a look at our team behind it as well. So basically, it's all about the Parliament. And now, if you look in this week, you would see my team members Snapchatting from Strasbourg, from the plenary session.
Great. And it's no secret that the EP is social media savvy. Besides Snapchat, you've got official accounts on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, Flickr, Vine, Reddit, Pinterest, YouTube, Spotify, and LinkedIn. And I'm sure there's more. But where does Snapchat fit into your overall social media strategy? Do you consider it, say, one of the more successful social media initiatives that you guys have started?
So it's still quite a young project, but we do consider it quite successful. It fits very well with our platform, with our strategy, I'm sorry, because we try to go where people are. And now young Europeans are on Snapchat, so that's natural for us to go there and try to discuss with them in a platform that they're most likely to use.
Makes sense. Yeah. And what type of engagement are you getting from these young Europeans? So you post stories quite regularly, a couple times a week. How many followers do you have in total, and approximately how many views are you getting on your stories per day?
So in comparison to our Facebook page or Twitter account, it's still quite small because it's only 16,000 followers at the moment. Mm-hmm. But we're getting very good level of engagement, I would say. We get between 7 or 8,000 views per snap. And it's very positive engagement as well. So the messages that we're getting back from people are usually high quality, on the topic, very encouraging, asking questions actually about the work of the European Parliament, Europe in general.
Yeah, because since I've been following you guys, I've noticed that you try to reach out very much to Europeans, and you ask them questions like, for example, snap us back and ask us questions about what you'd like to hear from this or that MEP, Member of Parliament. Or I saw one recently that was National Refugee Day, or World Refugee Day, something like that. And you had, snap us back, I blank refugees. And then you would post the results of those submissions to your next story. And probably the most interesting example was you had a selfie competition where users would take a selfie somehow relating to the parliament, and the winner, one male and one female winner, would win a trip to Brussels. So do these kind of initiatives work in terms of driving engagement? Do you get a lot of these responses back to your Snapchat account?
Yes, we always get tons and tons of snaps back. Just last weekend, we had a story about Nonviolence Day, and we got plenty of responses, all on the topic of being discussed. And we can see people snapping us from basically all possible corners of Europe. And for us, it's a really great, first of all, source of content as well, because our followers are the added value. We are here in Brussels, but we can show content coming from all parts of Europe. And also, they are a really huge source of inspiration for us because we're learning what kind of language they're using, what are the most important topics for them. Mm-hmm. And it makes the account more authentic, I would say, because we can feature real people on it. Cool. And the competition that we had, it was really a fun idea. We just asked people to send a selfie with something that represents the parliament. We didn't give too many clues, and we let people be creative. And we got some really great people from Estonia, Germany, and France. And then we showed them the parliament, but for us, it was also a lesson on how young Europeans are using Snapchat and how they follow news on Snapchat as well.
Yeah, and then you actually Snapchatted about their visit that they won through Snapchat, which I thought
because we want to be transparent, we want to show that they actually came to the parliament and what do they think about the visit.
Exactly. You know, I wanted to submit to that myself. I couldn't find a good enough background to do it. But
there might be more to come in future, so stay tuned.
Great. I will. And do you notice any patterns in these responses back? Like, is it a particular age group, as you said, maybe younger Europeans? Or do you find that certain member states or certain countries are snapping more so than others?
So generally, our audience is quite young. This would be kids from 12 to 13 years old to students who are in their 20s. So it's a really young audience. And we see, based on the responses that we get, that they are coming from all EU member states, even from far away from the EU, because there are some people snapping us from the US, from the Middle East, even from various parts of even further away from Australia or Africa. Mm. So it's a really broad audience. And the biggest part and what we've noticed is that people are interested in politics, in what is happening in Europe and in European affairs. That maybe when there are these generalizations that young people don't care about politics, for us it's wrong. I mean, you just need to speak the right language and they will respond very well. So this is the biggest pattern we see, that people are actually interested in the news.
Interesting. And so we touched on this a little bit, but the European Union has 24 official and working languages. So how do you manage that kind of diversity when communicating through one Snap story?
It's not easy, but Snapchat is so visual, so it makes it easy. Even if not very fluent in English, you will still understand it. And also English, somehow for young people, it's like Latin for, in ancient times. I mean, they understand that there's no problem with communicating with them.
So it's essentially the idea that English is primarily the language that you've chosen to communicate through.
Yes.
Okay.
And for young people, I mean, they speak English very well. This is a common language between themselves. We see a lot of people studying in various countries, so they're used to using English as the language of their choice.
And what about the content for these stories? I mean, it must be a challenge to come up with fresh content. I mean, is there a certain target for how many times a week that you're trying to post? And how do you come up with fresh content for your stories?
So we know that there is no algorithm on Snapchat like it is on Facebook. So it's a bit easier. We know that we don't have to post too many times per week. It's more important to post content that is interesting and more creative. So it's not yet as important to post on a more regular basis. So we choose when it's something interesting, when we have something to say, when something interesting is happening. And usually content-wise, we have lots of content, but the problem is how to make it accessible for younger audiences and people who might not be experts in legislative terms and EU affairs. So this is more a challenge for us, how to find a creative way to explain what we do.
And do you have some sort of brainstorming sessions? Or?
We do have plenty of them. We meet every Monday to see what we're going to do for the next week. So we meet with a small team, because on our social media team, there's a couple of people and we share various projects, and there's always a dedicated team to this. So it's not only me snapping, but there's also Vasilis, Yana, and Robert and Ines who are part of the team. And we also sometimes ask other members of the team to help us with snapping when they go somewhere with members of the parliament. And then we do more long-term brainstorming as well.
Uh-huh. And this is something I'm a little bit curious to, which is, do you, I guess when you hand over the Snapchat account to someone else, they can just log in from their phone to the parliament's official account and snap from there? Or do you have one phone that has the Snapchat account that you lend out to other people?
So we have the collaborative tool that allows you to link your private account to the parliament Snapchat account.
Okay.
So we give people a right to publish in our story in a way.
Aha. Uh-huh. So they can record from their own account and then publish that to the Snapchat account. Okay.
That makes it a bit easier, because otherwise in the past we were logging each other out all the time and it was becoming a bit messy.
Right. And is that through Snapchat? Is that a service through Snapchat, or is that a third party? Okay. So getting a little bit into the monetary side of things, I'm an American citizen, but I'm living in Denmark, and therefore I'm paying taxes to the EU. So I'm interested a little bit into the monetary aspect of Snapchat. And from some previous research I've done on the 2014 European Parliament elections, I know that the EP invested some 5 million euros in a 9-month social media campaign to promote information and awareness about the European Parliament ahead of the elections. So I'm assuming that setting up a Snapchat account as an institution, like with an individual account, would be free. But am I wrong on that?
So, yeah, it's free.
So you
it's
don't.
It's a normal basic account that anyone else would have.
Really? And
yes.
So do you get any sort of analytics besides? So I know from my personal account, I can see how many people have viewed my stories and who those people are. Is that also the extent of analytics that that you get as well?
Yes, exactly. And we can also see the number of screenshots on a snap.
Right.
Sometimes we do have a call with Snapchat, because they have a contact that deals with government organizations, just to understand what are the trends, what are the good practices, and then they can have a look and tell us what is the overall number of followers. But we don't know much more than a normal user would know.
And
I think this is the beauty of the platform, that it keeps it very, very private for people.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any sort of idea from looking at engagement so far, like what drives engagement? Is it a certain type of content you're posting, or is it maybe related to issues coming up in the European Parliament plenary sessions? Or do you have an idea on that? Or
so we always have more engagement on the topics that are somehow close to people, like climate change, or for example, the trade agreement with the US. Education, economy, jobs, things like this, and on topics that are in the news, so like the refugee crisis or Brexit, for example, the referendum, we had a lot of interactions coming from people, and these are the most engaging things. And of course, when we ask for engagement, then we have a lot of engagement, when we ask people to share a story, to share a comment or a photo with us.
So, and I hadn't really thought about this before, but do you get message or Snapchats from people even when you don't ask for them?
Yes, we get quite a lot of snaps, and when they are about European issues, we try to respond to them.
It's
quite interestingly, lots of students writing some kind of papers or thesis about or school projects about the EU. And for me, it's interesting that they come and ask about it on Snapchat. This is like, I'm a bit older, so for me, I Google and look for a link, but they are very direct and they just go to the source, which is great. Because we can actually provide them with a good source, because we have plenty of briefings and materials about the EU and the Parliament. We got questions about how to get a traineeship. We got questions about what do you think about a certain issue, where to find information. And sometimes the most funny questions are when they're asking if there's a real person behind, and we could snap them a photo of the team.
Great. No, I think it's great that you have a team there that actually responds, because I think a 12 or 13 year old might not think to send an email to the official Parliament's account, right? But what about geofilters? So for those who don't know what a geofilter is, it's essentially when you take a Snapchat in a certain location, you can add a filter that's a sort of artistic graphic design that represents that place. And I know that you need to pay for geofilters, and that you get some sort of analytics about how many people are using them. So do you have an idea about how many people are using the European Parliament's geofilter? And can you give us an idea about the numbers of that?
So there are geofilters that you pay for, and there are free geofilters. And we have a free geofilter because geofilters are submitted by the community as well.
Okay.
So we created just a geofilter like any member of the community would do. And we submitted it to review for Snapchat. So we have one for Parliament in Brussels and one for the Parliament's building in Strasbourg.
So this is almost entirely free, except for the staff that you're employing to manage this communication strategy. That's fantastic. And is that any different from Facebook or Twitter or your other platforms?
I mean, with Facebook and Twitter, you have to fight a bit more for your visibility because there's so much competition and there's this algorithm that decides what people see. So when we have big campaigns, we might support it with some paid ads as well, if it's at the European elections or a big topic for the Parliament. But most of the things we use the free tools that are available for everyone.
All right, I'm a happy taxpayer then in that regard. But so my last question for you is as I mentioned, the European Parliament has been a pretty early adopter of Snapchat, and you've been quite creative in how you've been using it so far. Can you give us some insight into your Snapchat strategy moving forward? Are there any plans or initiatives that we should look out for in the future?
So that's going to be one of the platforms that we're going to be working very hard on ahead of European elections in 2019, because we believe that the kids that are joining now, who are 14 or 15, might be the first-time voters in 2019.
Right.
So we will put a lot of time and the resources in terms of people on the team into it. So we're hoping to grow it, and we hope to engage the audience more and feature the audience more often than we do now. Possibly we will work with some influencers. We did to work with some influencers from Instagram, for example, in the past, or YouTube, and that was always very interesting for us. So maybe we'll try here as well. And we'll see where the platform goes as well, because it's changing quite dramatically as well.
Absolutely. Carolina, this has been super interesting. Thanks again for taking the time out to share your insights with us. And best of luck with the account. It's been fun to follow so far.
Thank you very much, and thank you for choosing us as a topic for your podcast.
You got it. I've just been speaking with Carolina Wozniak, social media coordinator for the European Parliament. To keep abreast with the latest going on inside the EP, you can follow their Snapchat account, Europarl, or you can find them on Twitter at Europarl_EN, or on Facebook at the European Parliament. All right, folks, that's it for the first edition of the Social Media and Politics podcast. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. Big thanks to everyone here at Copenhagen College Radio, editing by Peter Urbeck, and the funky jams you're listening to are produced by Earfunk out of New Orleans. Like the European Parliament, we're keen on getting input from you. Drop us a line through our Twitter account at SMNP Podcast or through our Facebook page, Social Media and Politics Podcast, and let us know what you think. Signing off from Copenhagen, I'm your host, Michael Becetta. See you next time.